This is the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome to Thriving Entrepreneur with your host, Steve Kidd, third-generation minister and business coach. Join Steve and his guests to get answers to your questions and help break through to the next level in your business.
This is Steve. Welcome to Thriving Entrepreneur. I'm so glad that you're with us here today. We appreciate the time that you take out of your day to listen to each and every episode of Thriving Entrepreneur. And today we are going to help you innovate every aspect of your business and maybe just a little bit of your life as well. Now, there's this big thing that we talk about a lot in different aspects on the show, but it's a thing called emotional intelligence. And it can honestly sound a little scary, when you just take it from the macro, from the big approach and go, ooh, emotional intelligence. But the truth of the matter is, it's just simply being a person of integrity, being a person can trust what you're saying, and that you're dealing with the emotions that you have in life in a purposeful and on purpose kind of way. You know, I've said in other episodes, there's a difference between responding and reacting. A response is something where you take the time to think about how you want to respond to it, whereas a reaction is just whatever immediate feeling comes to you, you immediately take. Today, we want to take that in a whole new level to help you be innovative. See, the thing about it is we need to be committed to growth. Are you committed to growth? What if from just today, I could help you grow your business by an additional 10%? How much would an additional 10% revenue mean to your business if it happened over the course of this next month, let's just say? What would a weekly, a monthly, an annual revenue increase of 10% do to your company? What would it do to your own personal lifestyle? So think about this for a second. If you have a $100,000 business, a 10% revenue increase would mean that you would be bringing another $10,000 into your business. Think about the things that you could do with an additional $10,000 in your business right now today. Reminds me of a really funny story. I was actually in a meeting not that long ago, and a person stood up and was asking a question of the leader of the meeting. And they said, well, if only I could figure out how to hire more employees. And the person said, well, you know, what kind of money would you make if you had those extra employees? And it ended up being, long story short, about $29,000 that hiring a couple of new employees would make for them. And of course, obviously the person said, well, I think if you had an additional $29,000, you could find a way to be able to pay a couple of people. It's those kind of innovations. It's the ability to look at what are the needs of our customers, what are the needs in the market, and how can we then serve them in order to be able to do that. So to be able to really bring this home, I've been joined by a great friend who is going to help us talk today about innovation, whether that be technology innovations or simple innovations, but things that you can do to be innovative in your company.
Join me in welcoming Dana Oliver. Hi, Dana. How are you doing today?
Hi, Steve. I'm doing quite well. Thank you very much. And let me just tell you, not only is it an honor and a pleasure to meet you, but it's a joy to be on Thriving Entrepreneur.
Well, we appreciate having you as a guest. I'm really looking forward to diving into this subject because, I like it when I get the information on what the guest is going to talk about, and I want to hear it. Not to say anything bad about any other guests, but sometimes it's like, I'm not really interested in that topic. but this one, I was like, oh, I can't wait to talk about that. So I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, I'm equally as thrilled. So I can talk about innovation and leadership, my two favorite subjects, all day long. So I'll look for you to rein me in.
All right. So Dana, tell the folks that don't know you a little bit about who you are and what you've done to this point in your career.
Oh, sure. Thank you very much for that. I mean, I can tell you, I'd like to say I'm one of those nice kind of American success stories. I grew up from a very humble family. My dad was in the military. My mother, you know, was a stay-at-home mom who took care of four kids. We had effectively no disposable money or income to send me to college. I was one of those guys that, you know, if I wanted to get anywhere, I had to go myself. So, you know, I worked full time right out of high school, decided to go to night school for 10 years to get my degrees, have been in research and development for 30 years. The last 14 years I've spent with Medtronic Surgical Technologies, a division that I've helped grow from $100 million to approximately $2 billion. So it's been a great run, and thus why I've written my two books, and in particular why I wrote the second was to introduce, you know, business philosophies that have worked very successfully for me, as well as share innovation philosophies for your guests.
So for people who have preconceived notions, how do you define the word innovation?
Yeah, it's a good question. Thank you for that, Steve. Well, certainly the first thing you think about is ideation. And ideation is really nothing more than the coming up of ideas, which is relatively easy. But innovation is the distillation to practice of those ideas. So clearly there's a fundamental difference between coming up with them and then bringing them to practice.
I think there's a lot of people out there that if they could just get paid for great ideas, they would be multi-billionaires.
Oh, boy. And at the end of the day, I mean, no matter how great an idea is, if you don't ultimately commercialize it, you know, it's nothing more than a dream. So the hard part is taking that idea and finding the right resources and the capabilities to bring that to bear. I think that's why in business, you know, you have so many leaders. There's a lot of good ideas out there, but they get very, very antsy about the execution because they can't control the execution. That's your infrastructure. So strategic planning is essential, but also execution is equally as essential.
Absolutely. What makes the difference between, you know, any old innovation and something that is a lasting innovation?
Yeah, very good. Very good question, Steve. And I think for me, and that's what I write about, right? At the end of the day, I write about unmet need. So, you know, anybody can have an innovation. Anyone can have an idea. Anyone can have kind of what I'm going to call a me too. You know, someone invented the pet rock and someone wants to, you know, paint the pet rock a different color. Okay, well, maybe that's an innovation, but you know what? It's not great. What I tend to target in my industry, you know, in medical devices, but it should be in any industry if you want to differentiate yourself and get premium pricing, is you find something that your customers are doing that no one else can do that is really hard. Because when you begin to understand your customer at such a closeness, at such a level, and you watch them do, you know, performing their craft, there's going to be things that they take for granted. And when you start to look at that and say, my God, I have the idea to help them save more time or something that's more efficient. You know, example in medicine, it's all about, can you reduce the operating room time, which is hugely expensive? Can you reduce blood loss? You know, can you make the procedure so that people can heal sooner or better? So when you begin looking at product ideas, you look for pain points that are very time consuming, and then you begin to ask questions, how can I make that easier and more efficient? That's a real good way to begin ferreting out unmet need. And then when you do that, if no one else is doing that, namely your competitors, that means it's likely you have something that you can patent. After you can then patent it and you're offering that service or opportunity or feature exclusively, well, geez, that means you can charge more for that. So that's the whole premise of what I speak to and preach and write about in the book.
That makes a lot of sense. I think there are so many times that the best innovations, the best ideas that need to be taken further than ideas, you know, they don't make it off of the drawing board because it just seems too easy to us. You know, the thing that we do with brilliance usually is that easy. What do you say to people who have this great idea, but it just seems like, you know, because it's just so obvious to them. It's like, well, if you just did ABC, it would be easy. But yet they're not then implementing the, well, show people how to do ABC then.
Well, you know what? Just even though something might be obvious, the question is, are people doing it? Example, you and I can both relate to simple things like, you know, I mean, in our lifetime, look at the potato chip bag clip. How obvious is that? Mm. But I can tell you, I mean, here it is. I'm an inventor and an engineer. I've got, you know, 25 patents. But boy, you know what? I'd be the first one to buy a bag of chips and kind of, you know, roll up the package back. But, you know, and it was just a clothespin. I mean, so how obvious is that? But boy, everyone and their brother now is using a clothespin to tie out their potato chip bags. So to me, just because it's obvious does not mean that someone has taken the opportunity to bring it to commercial marketplace and take full advantage of that. I mean, if you have an obvious idea, the first thing is don't tell anybody. Don't tell your friends. Don't tell anybody. Keep it to yourself. Write it down somewhere. Date it. And then to begin to do research. The web is such a great place to go finding, you know, even things like that are obvious. You begin typing in, you know, containers to hold closed potato chip bags. You'll see everything in their brother that's out there.
Mm. Well, and, you know, sometimes innovations are brand new mousetraps. They're something that nobody else has ever thought of. And you were talking about stuff in your lifetime. You know, I mean, over the course of the 49 years that I've been alive, you know, we've seen things like microwave ovens and cell phones and all kinds of stuff that was, you know, Star Trek stuff way back, you know, and now it's just, you know, my kids, they're like, well, what do you mean you didn't have a cell phone?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, it's funny. Like you said, in our lifetime, I mean, think about if you could be, you know, turning that 100-year-old mark. I mean, you know, the world's gone from horse and buggy. Mm. I mean, imagine that, going to cars, to trains, to supersonic jets, to, you know, wired technology and the internet and, you know, replacement organs. And boy, people that are, you know, 100 years old, they've gone from the magical elixir that someone would ride by in a town to, you know, to stem cell research. It's amazing what's happened in a relatively short period of time. And I think, you know, the opportunities are very vast upon us that futuristic. I think about stem cell research. I think about connected technologies, you know, connecting your clothes, wearables. I think about consumables. I think about additives. So, all's good. And I think the future is very bright for innovation.
Mm, absolutely. I agree with you. And like you said, you know, I mean, there's those extremely advanced things that are now part of our day-to-day life. And like you said, the really simple things, like somebody who took a clothespin, redesigned it mildly, and now it's a paper, you know, now it's a potato chip clip. So I think innovation is everywhere when we're looking for it and open to it.
Oh, and I think that obviousness, that's a great point, is that after you come up with it, everyone's like, my God, why didn't I think of that? And I think that's part of, again, part of innovation. I use mantras in each chapter that I write about is a mantra because it helps me, you know, message to my team. But one of my mantras is it takes a long time to get to simple.
Ooh, I love that statement. Think about that one for a minute now. It takes a long time to get too simple. Now think about it. Think about the most simplistic, simple things that we have in our lives right now. Think about something like, you know, the eyelets on the end of your shoes. Think about that for a minute. That is the most simplistic thing. And yet, if you've ever tried to lace a shoe when, you know, that little plastic piece has popped off, it really is tough to get it through the hole, that little simple piece of plastic. And yet imagine all of the things, you know, there are so many things that have been innovated into our life and into our society that we take for granted now, but they went through time after time after thing to be able to get to that simple solution of a paperclip, of scotch tape, or those kind of things. So I want you to begin thinking about, while we're on this commercial break, what is something simple that I'm overlooking? Probably because it's too easy. And then we'll be right back here with you on Thriving Entrepreneur.
Hi, I'm Dr. Maish Seibel, a leading authority on women's wellness and menopause. When my wife Sharon had her ovaries removed to prevent cancer, she was immediately thrown into early menopause. She needed estrogen to relieve her symptoms, but her doctors weren't sure if it was safe or if it would cause breast cancer. I had to know the truth. After years of research, I discovered there was an estrogen window, a window of opportunity to take estrogen that lowers disease risk and increases estrogen's effectiveness on symptoms. I realized there are millions of other women who are also confused and fearful of taking estrogen. That's why I wrote The Estrogen Window, which just hit number one bestseller status on Amazon. Find out what women are so excited about. Order your copy now at estrogenwindowbook.com.
You've heard Kathy and I talk about it. You've seen the workshops. You have watched as others of your friends have become a best-selling author. And now it's your turn. Let me ask you this. What would being a best-selling author do for your business? Over 80% of people surveyed said that they want to write a book, which means that if you're listening, you probably are one of those people. Now is your time, because you have a message that needs to be shared. That message is not for you. It's not for your ego. It is because it serves other people. Kathy and I are here to help you share your unique brilliance with the world. All you need to do is go to wehelpyouthrive.com, check us out, and find out how you can be a best-selling author today.
Welcome back to Thriving Entrepreneur.
This is Steve, and I'm here with Dana Oliver. We're talking to you today about innovation and how you can be innovative in your business. We talked about, just before the break, a wonderful, amazing new phrase that you'll probably hear me say all the time now. It takes a long time to get to simple. I hope some of you thought about that over the commercial break, and I would be interested. Hashtag Thriving Entrepreneur and tell me some of the simple things that you realized that you're overlooking in your business. So Dana, talk to us a little bit more about how easy it is to get to simple and yet how tough that can be.
So what is not obvious, and that's why it's so easy to be what I call a Monday morning quarterback. It's easy to say, well, hey, this was the right play or that was the wrong play. It's no different than when you design technology. When you have to white sheet technology, what you do as an engineer, you're solving problems as you experience each one. But you might have to solve 10 or 12 or 20 problems before you're done at the end of the day. But then when you look back, you go, my God, now that I knew I had 20 problems to solve and I have the answers, that's why you would have done it differently. And that's why technology, as soon as you're done developing something, that's why there's always ways to move on and do something better. There's an expression, and that's, you know, kill the engineers. And it's a favorable, not literally, of course, but and how that was borne out is that engineers, as they're continuing to design and invent and make it better, you know, technology moves around them and upon them. And they look at what they've done and they recognize, my God, I could have done this with less parts or simpler parts or faster parts or more flexible parts. And that's why evolution continues. And that's, I'll tell you, that's why people have to continually invest. I preach that I like to see, if you want to grow your business, boy, I'd like to see you be investing 10% of your company's revenues back into research and development, because that allows your research team to continue to be differentiating, you know, developing and continuing to innovate your products, which then in turn separate you from your competition, allows you to get back in front of your sales force. It tells your customers, hey, this is the company to partner with, and it keeps everyone excited, keeps people in your business excited, keeps, you know, your innovation team excited, your customers excited, and it keeps, you know, growing your business and generating additional revenues.
You reminded me of a story that I heard, you know, back when I was homeschooling my kids. They're all, you know, basically grown now, but I read this story of a guy that was a chemist for Dow Chemical. And so he knew his stuff, you know, it wasn't like he was just, you know, a chemistry teacher, even he was at a fairly high level in chemistry, and he was teaching all three of his sons. One was a senior, one was a junior, and one was a freshman. He was teaching them chemistry because it's the love of his life, you know? And, his youngest son kept wanting to jump to the end of the book. He was really excited about something in the end of that book. And, you know, and as a dad, he was like, you know, especially an engineer, you know, very regimented, you know, and it's like, no, you have to do step one and then step two and then step three. And the son just kept stepping, you know, jumping over all of those and going right to the end of the book. And it ended up that his son, at something like 15 or 16 years old, invented a whole brand new way of doing something that had never been even thought of in the industry, you know, that Dow Chemical actually picked up and now uses. And it's that kind of a thing that really, you know, it just happens all the time in innovations.
Yeah. Well, I think this, you think about innovation, it kind of comes in three different potential flavors. And what I mean by that, it's the flavors that when you spend a lot of time with your customers, you begin to see opportunities. I talk about the pain points. So that's, you know, for me, that's my favorite way, because I think it allows you to stay close with your customers and continue to evolve your products and your brands through their eyes. The second way is if you're a technology company. So example, if you think about computer disks, they're all about, you know, think about Intel, a faster and more powerful chip. You know, so they're technology based, and then so they're forever looking at better ways to harness and innovate their technology. But then to your point, the Dow Cornings, there's the ones, the surprises. You know, this is no different. Like you think about Kevlar. Kevlar is a great example of this. Goes back when the country was having severe gas shortages, and there was a lot of interest around tires that were more efficient. And so during the development for tires, they ultimately discovered Kevlar, which obviously it wasn't a great tire application, and it took years and years to figure out what that innovation was. But now when you look at its ability to protect ballistics, I mean, it's found a new home, and it's, you know, doing exceptionally well. So those are kind of, you know, the three legs to the stool when you think about a lot of innovation that takes place.
I like that. Close to the needs of your customers that you find by being close to them, better technology, and things that just hit us that are just surprises.
Yeah, it's a good way to look at innovation. But I think that's why too I preach and I write about purposeful. You know, I am very purposeful. I'm a practicing engineer, and to me, if you want to, you know, if you own a business, you want guys like me to be there that are saying, hey Dan, if I'm going to give you 10% of my revenues, I want to make sure that that's a good place to put my bet. It's no different than your 401k portfolio manager. Well, you don't want to give him money and then expect that you don't want to see a loss on that money. And to me, business is no different. If you're a businessman and you're placing bets organically and you're not getting a favorable return on that, that means your team is making, you're placing bad bets. You might be the guy giving them the money, but I'm telling you, the people that are ultimately making the call when they're screening through their portfolio of what to bet in, they're not making good bets. So, you know, as a business, you got to start looking there. And I think that's why you can't be afraid either if you have to replace your leadership in those areas. You know, then that's what you need to do. But I think it's in my position, I expect if you give me money, I need to be giving you that money back plus more. That's how the game needs to shake. And if I can't do that, then I should be looking, you know, to exit the business.
So what are you know, if you were to put them in a list, what are the secrets for being profitable and having lasting innovation?
Yeah, that's a great question, Steve. And I write about that. Matter of fact, I've done another piece. But anyway, I break it into effectively four tenets. And the four tenets are, in my book anyway, so you need to commit to business growth through organic innovation by funding research and development at investments of 10% or greater as a percentage of the company's total revenues. So you want to invest 10% of your revenues back into R&D. That's one. Two, develop and evolve your company's product brands through your customers' eyes. You know, we briefly talked about that. Three, you want to, you know, obviously continually improve your products and technology, but you need to focus on only the few truly strategic core platforms. Most companies fail because they get too distracted and they lose sight of what's truly important. And the last one is you want to hire really smart, ambitious, get-it-done people. Get out of their way, and you need to manage them with what I call emotionally intelligent innovation leadership. This is the key. This is the magical pixie dust. You hire a bunch of smart people. You can't try to put a process in front of them and churn them through that. The process is not what makes great innovation. People do. But the leadership is what is that pixie dust to excite people and to look at those product ideas, to figure out, you know, and how to engage with them even further and get them more excited to, you know, keep chasing down that idea, distill that into practice. So those are the four.
So commit to business growth, which also means committing 10% of the revenue of your company back into R&D. Yep. Develop new products through the eyesight of your customers. What are the customers wanting and needing as opposed to forcing it down their throat, whether they want it or not? Number three, focus on a few truly strategic platforms rather than just scatter gunning it. And number four, hire smart people and then get out of their way and just lead them. That's amazing. That's really good stuff.
Thank you for that. And I think, too, when you talk about developing products through your customers' eyes, to me, that's what I write about. So to me, the first thing you need to do, it's like anything, if you want to have an intelligent conversation with somebody, well, you need to learn their world. So it's no different. If you're, example, if you're with your kids and you're at, I don't know, an event, who knows what the event is, you know, but you meet a neighbor or you meet a parent's friend, and naturally it's like, how, you know, you cordially introduce yourself, and then the topic comes up, well, hey, what do you do for work? And maybe one guy's, you know, who knows, a surgeon, and the other guy's, I don't know, a communications expert or psychologist. I mean, you know what, they're probably going to talk and find some common ground, but they're not going to engage deeply. So if you want to develop products through your customer's eyes, you need to learn their world. So the first thing I want to do is I take my guys is understand who is our customer. And after I get that, I train my people up. So like, for example, in my group, we're going to train up on understanding anatomy and physiology and how therapies and there's treatments so that we're going to get close to understanding what it's like. Matter of fact, I'm going to train up to be at least a resident level of our doctor customers because then you can talk to them at a deeper level. And when you engage at a deeper level, you begin to have deeper discussions around solving difficult problems. And when you begin to have those discussions, then you talk about solutions. Now, and then when you go a step further, it's what I call, you know, innovation begins with an eye, and not the letter I, but the eyeball. So you begin watching your customers in a simulated environment. So now you have a deep understanding of what they're doing. You're having deep conversations with them, and now you're watching them perform their craft. Boy, are you telling me you don't think that there's opportunities and ideas and concepts that you're going to see that there's a better way to do? I mean, I've made a career of this. I can guarantee you that's how you do it. That's what I write through. And that's what I do is like each chapter is one of the mantras I preach. I've distilled them down to the most popular ones. And then I try to talk to them and explain the importance.
The book is called The Secrets for Profitable and Lasting Innovation. Now, just think about that for a minute. Profitable and lasting innovation. Don't we all want that in our business? Isn't every single business constantly looking for profitability and an innovative way to be able to reach their customers? And I love how Dana has been sharing with us that it's really just as simple as paying attention to what people want. So I hope that you're really getting some great stuff out of this. We are going to take another quick commercial break, and then we will be right back here on Thriving Entrepreneur.
This is the EWN Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Dr. Maish Seibel, a leading authority on women's wellness and menopause. When my wife Sharon had her ovaries removed to prevent cancer, she was immediately thrown into early menopause. She needed estrogen to relieve her symptoms, but her doctors weren't sure if it was safe or if it would cause breast cancer. I had to know the truth. After years of research, I discovered there was an estrogen window, a window of opportunity to take estrogen that lowers disease risk and increases estrogen's effectiveness on symptoms. I realize there are millions of other women who are also confused and fearful of taking estrogen. That's why I wrote The Estrogen Window, which just hit number one bestseller status on Amazon. Find out what women are so excited about. Order your copy now at estrogenwindowbook.com.
You've heard Kathy and I talk about it. You've seen the workshops. You have watched as others of your friends have become a best-selling author. And now it's your turn. Let me ask you this. What would being a best-selling author do for your business? Over 80% of people surveyed said that they want to write a book, which means that if you're listening, you probably are one of those people. Now is your time because you have a message that needs to be shared. That message is not for you. It's not for your ego. It is because it serves other people. Kathy and I are here to help you share your unique brilliance with the world. All you need to do is go to WeHelpYouThrive.com. Check us out and find out how you can be a best-selling author today.
Welcome back to Thriving Entrepreneur.
This is Steve. Welcome back to Thriving Entrepreneur. I'm here with Dana Oliver, and we are talking today about innovation in your business. The book is called The Secrets for Profitable and Lasting Innovation, and Dana was sharing some really great tips with us on how we can be innovative.
You really said something, so impactful in there that I think a lot of times is the point that people skip. It's the thing that they miss. You said learn your customers and then learn their world. And in that, you were then talking about knowing the doctors and things like that. You're making medical technologies which help people with all kinds of diseases and things like that, and all the great stuff that stem cell research is, beginning to show possible. But that you, your customer, is the doctor. It's not the guy who has, cancer or whatever and needs a cure. You're actually speaking to the doctor. And that's so important because often we aren't talking the right language because we're not talking to the person that's actually our customer.
Steve, that's fantastic insight. Matter of fact, that's another mantra I have, and it's what I call become the product. And what I mean by that is that, so example, I write about this in the book is that, I exaggerate a little bit, but imagine if you're going to have, you go out to dinner and the chef gives you, I don't know if you're vegetarian or not, but if you were just for the moment, liked filet, and the chef made you the greatest filet in the world, but then imagine if the whole experience around you was awful, that it rained, you got wet, your reservation got lost, you didn't have a table, you were behind a noisy crowd, you were the service staff kept on bumping into you. You know, all your side items were cold. Your company's, you know, plates were wrong. Would that filet be great?
No.
Well, it's the experience. So even though you need to understand your customer, you want to become the product. And what I mean by that is that helps you understand and see the entire supply chain. And that's where great companies begin to really become great at what they do. If you think about places like Walt Disney, I mean, they have this great theme park, but beyond the theme park is it starts with everything. People, they're clean cut. They have clean, fresh looking, bright clothes on. They greet you with a smile. You go into the parks. You never see any dirt or any, everything's very clean. It's very safe. You feel like you can let your kids run around. I mean, you can be there for hours. I mean, yeah, even though it's expensive, how many other places can you be there for 14 or 15 hours running around ride after ride after ride? So they've tapped into the entire experience at the best that they could. And I think that's what I mean about becoming the product.
Mm.
If you want that kicker product, you have to experience the whole supply chain and move out of your office.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, we were at Disney here just a little while ago, and we actually learned they actually even have a maximum height requirement for the ladies who can play the princesses. And the reason is because their demographic is the small children, you know, that want to run up and hug Cinderella or whatever. And if she's right. too tall, it becomes scary and intimidating to the little girls.
Wow. I mean, think about that level of detail. I mean, that's what I mean. To me, you know, the original Disney just amazes me that, you know, the whole theme park, you know, not all the other divisions that they've later bought into, but that's impressive. I mean, talk about knowing your customer. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a fantastic example, Steve.
So talk to me a little bit about the, you know, what you've learned. If you could go back in time and talk to yourself 10 years, 15 years ago, you know, whatever, I'll let you pick when, and tell him what you know now that you wish you would have known back then, what would be the one thing you would tell him?
Yeah, you know what, I think for me, Steve, it's really a very easy answer, and that's the importance of emotional intelligence. And I say that because leading people is about people. It's not about yourself. And if you want to be great, you will only get great not worrying about your own career ascension, but thinking about all the people that you lead, because your influence is multiplicative. And how you lead them, people need to feel that, one, you have a vision, that, two, you have a little bit of a dynamic personality that they want to follow. But also, two, people are really smart. They see through you. If they think that you don't care about their careers or have an interest in them, why should they work hard and care about you? But if you're an emotionally intelligent leader and you know how to pick talent, you know how to get out of their way, you know how to empower them, engage them, and instill them with excitement, and then you recognize that you all win in that game, that's emotional intelligence. And boy, it's kind of like if you have an oppressive boss, who wants to work for that person? Who wants to go out of the way for that person? Who wants to make them look good? Well, it's emotional intelligence, because you can increase your team's productivity by as much as 30% if you're employing it. So to me, it's 9 times more important than IQ. I mean, IQ is obviously just, you know, getting people in the door. If you have a degree, you're smart, but that's the requisite. The key is after you get them in the door, it's how you manage them. It goes back to that fourth tenet we talked about, right? It's the importance of emotionally intelligent innovation leadership. And I was able very early to tap into that skill. And I didn't pick up on it until, you know, I'd read Primal Leadership by Daniel Goleman, which really helped me understand the power of emotional intelligence.
Mm. Yeah, the age-old saying, you lead people, we manage things. Nobody wants to work for a boss, which means you don't want to be as the owner, as the manager, the kind of person who sits behind a desk and sends everybody out. And then, you know, they play video games or whatever while the people are working. You want to be that person that at the end of the day, when everybody else is going home, they all know that you're still in it with the thick with them. And, you know, first thing in the morning, you know, you're there.
I mean, the number one reason people leave their company is not the company, but it's because of their boss. The number one reason. And when the economy's good, people are four times more likely to leave a bad boss than a good one. And if you're a good boss, people want to stay with you because they recognize that they have something special, that they feel appreciated. And especially if they think you're with a growing business, they think there's reward in that. The business is growing. It's going to represent opportunities. You know, hope their salary should grow. There should maybe be some equity. All of those things come back to that emotional intelligence. And, you know, and that's why there's good businesses and there's better businesses. And a lot of it comes down to the leadership. The leadership team you choose is key.
Mm. A good friend of mine, Jim Saldani, who was the chief operations officer for Intel back in the early 80s, you know, before I was out of high school, but he was. he developed a skill that he nicknamed management by walking around. And was literally just him walking through the building, talking to the people and making them feel like he cared. And, you know, the company that I worked for with him later, the other manager was totally not that way. And basically all the employees didn't like that guy, but everybody stuck around because everybody loved Jim.
Right. Oh, my God. And what I tell you, when people, to your point, when people love someone like Jim, that's what happens. You have this dynamic. People, they know that they're respected and appreciated. That's all people want, is they want to know that, one, their boss knows who they are, that they know what they're working on, and then do they take an interest? Boy, how do you feel? If you're one of 100 people, and I mean, I have over 100 people, you know what? It's not uncommon for me to walk. I like that, walk around by managing. And I ask people, and most of the people, I just know what they're doing. So I ask them one or two questions. They get thrilled to talk about, you know, thinking, my God, hey, the boss takes an interest in what I'm doing. That just inspires them to work harder, to continue to advance it. And that's one of the tricks I use is everyone knows I get excited about innovation. So, you know what, I use that mechanism, that blind spot that I have so that I jazz up my team and they know I get excited about it, but then they in return will work really hard to keep advancing the technology and they want to come back and show it to me. So, you know, it's that kind of cycle. That's what I call the pixie dust. But if you have a boss, right, that, you know, even though he might have the same people I do, but he's in his office, he closes the door, he's not accessible, you know, he's grumpy, you can't look him in the eye, you can't talk to him, he's not interested. My God, how much innovation do you think is going to be taking place in that business? Mm-hmm. Not a lot.
I don't know about you, but I've got my notebook out. I've been taking notes, typing them out, actually, as Dana's been talking. There are some amazing insights into this. And I think that we just touched on something that is unfortunate, but is very true in a lot of our businesses. We've gotten to the place where we're not growing. More importantly, we're not innovating. We're not really reaching the needs of our customers like what we used to. And the question, the challenge, in fact, that I have for you while we're in this commercial break is to ask yourself, how engaged am I with the people that work for me? Have I become the person who is locked in their office, busy, because there is so much for us to be busy with? Or am I still out and engaged with my people? Am I inspiring them to innovate and to greatness? Think about that during this commercial break. We will be right back on Thriving Entrepreneur.
Hi, I'm Dr. Maish Seibel, a leading authority on women's wellness and menopause. When my wife, Sharon, had her ovaries removed to prevent cancer, she was immediately thrown into early menopause. She needed estrogen to relieve her symptoms, but her doctors weren't sure if it was safe or if it would cause breast cancer. I had to know the truth. After years of research, I discovered there was an estrogen window, a window of opportunity to take estrogen that lowers disease risk and increases estrogen's effectiveness on symptoms. I realized there are millions of other women who are also confused and fearful of taking estrogen. That's why I wrote The Estrogen Window, which just hit number one bestseller status on Amazon. Find out what women are so excited about. Order your copy now at estrogenwindowbook.com.
You've heard Kathy and I talk about it. You've seen the workshops. You have watched as others of your friends have become a best-selling author. And now it's your turn. Let me ask you this. What would being a best-selling author do for your business? Over 80% of people surveyed said that they want to write a book, which means that if you're listening, you probably are one of those people. Now is your time because you have a message that needs to be shared. That message is not for you. It's not for your ego. It is because it serves other people. Kathy and I are here to help you share your unique brilliance with the world. All you need to do is go to WeHelpYouThrive.com, check us out, and find out how you can be a best-selling author today.
Welcome back to Thriving Entrepreneur.
Well, Dana, I know that there are some people that are listening that want to, at the very least, get your book, maybe possibly do some other work with you. What would be the best way for a person to start connecting with you to have you help them learn how to be successful and long-term innovative?
Oh, thanks for that, Steve. I think the best way is certainly is they went to my website, which is www.mantraleadership, and that's one word, mantraleadership.com. You can see my books. You can preview them. You know, I post the interviews like we're doing today on there, as well as, you know, some other magazine articles, so people can get a bigger flavor of not only the books but the things I write and speak to. And they link off to bona fide credible sites like Amazon and Barnes & Noble, so they don't have to feel like, you know, they're going through my site. So, again, www.mantraleadership.com.
Yeah. Mantraleadership.com. And, you know, as Dana said for us, mantra is spelled M-A-T-R-A, leadership, L-E-A-D-E-R-S-H-I-P.com. I really encourage you to check that out. Get some of Dana's books or, you know, other ways of connecting with him so that you can be innovative in your company. Well, Dana, I like to make sure that we leave people with something that they could take action on, something they can grab a hold of right now and start implementing in their life right now today. What would be that thing that somebody could take away from, you know, from this hour and really run with?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And it's really very simple, right? It's about what's strategically important. So I think you have to ask yourself, what's the single most important thing I need to get done today? So out of all the things you need to do, if you can only do one thing that's going to make either your personal career move or your business move or your project move, what is that one thing that needs to get done? And you make darn sure, because it's easy to walk into work and do 1,000 emails and feel like you did nothing. What's that one thing you need to do? I ask myself every morning before I come into work, what's that one long lead item? What's that most important thing? And I ask it every night when I go home.
It's really important to do too. And I would even add on to that, that then make that your first priority. Have that be the first thing you do, because you mentioned email, you know, email, social media, those kind of things. Something is just about, especially the bigger your business gets, is going to jump out and catch your attention. Next thing you know, it's lunchtime, right. And you haven't done that one thing that is really the important thing. So if you put it first, You know, the emails will wait. People will be okay if you take an hour to respond on social media instead of 5 minutes. You know, if your company is growing, if your company isn't showing people that you care about them and bringing out things that they need, you know, then, you know, your company's in the process of dying anyway. So the being right on top of email isn't going to help you.
I think, Steve, you hit it. And that's why most companies fail. Because, you know, I have, you know, if everything's important, nothing's important. You know, so you understand what is that strategically important thing. And the other thing is, a good rule is try to spend no more than 15 minutes a day on social media. Because that's like a black hole. You can easily find yourself just staring at computer screens talking about, oh my God, you know, I just had a cup of tea, or, you know, this is what just happened in the news, or, you know, at the end of the day, are any of those things ultimately important? If you want to be successful, boy, you better know, recognize what's strategic.
There are a lot of people out there that can run your social media for you. And there are some marketing programs. You know, Kathy and I, as a marketing company, we do have a whole lot of that we do. But the difference is what does this next post, what does this comment, how is that promoting my company? You know, like you said, I just had a cup of tea. Does that really engage the customers?
No, it's amazing. I mean, obviously there's some, you know, social media mavens, you know, out there. I guess you could make that for, you know, people like Donald Trump or Kim Kardashian, and I guess they've, you know, helped them make a living out of that. But the average person doesn't have that type of clout and power, so you better focus on your products and your brands and your business.
And the behind the scenes secret for Donald Trump and Kim Kardashian is they aren't just randomly, you know, promoting insert whatever cereal here. You notice I did that so that I didn't give a free advertisement to somebody. They're getting paid by those people, you know, to promote that. And there's a big difference between that and just simply taking a picture of your cereal bowl in the morning because you really think the world's interested.
Yeah. I mean, social media is powerful, but again, I go back to what's that strategically important initiative.
Yeah.
And if you do that, boy, you can be successful. Like I said, good rule, you know, try to spend no more than 15 minutes on that.
Absolutely. Well, Dana, I appreciate so much you taking the time with us today. You know, I really do encourage people to think about all of the words of this: profitable and lasting innovation, and really then begin to start implementing some emotional intelligence in their leading of people towards that end of being as innovative as you need to be able to really meet the needs, the real needs of your customer. Thanks so much for spending the time with us, Dana.
Steve, you've been a great host, and thank you very much for having me on your show. I hope I have the opportunity to maybe come back sometime, and it's been a joy.
Wow, I'm inspired. I've got some great notes here, some things that I know that I need to work on personally in my life and in our business, but also some things that I really think, as I said earlier, will probably end up becoming part of the languaging of things that I say from now on. I love that phrase. I want this to be imprinted in your memory. It takes a long time to get to simple. We try so hard to overcomplicate things. And I really encourage you today, let's not be so fancy with our solutions that we end up losing our customers. Let's meet their needs. I want to give a shout out to my amazing wife, Kathy. Most of you that know her know how incredibly awesome she is. And I thank her for the time that she spends every week so that I can do the show, you know, because I've told everybody it's my guilty pleasure, but also for the fact that her efforts, and don't get me wrong, I work with her, but her efforts are the primary way that we support Thriving Entrepreneur. You can get in on Kathy's brilliance by just simply going to bestsellersguild.com. That's bestsellersguild.com. It'll take you in to the free Facebook group. It's free to join. You just ask to join from that point, and you can find out how you can write your best-selling book. Imagine if you could take the amazing things that you have, like what Dana was sharing with us today, and you could share your unique brilliance with the world. Again, I want to really encourage some of you, because I know there's, statistically speaking, 81% of the people in the world want to write a book. They feel like they already have a book inside of them. So that's not the issue. The people that I'm speaking to, the people that are listening to this show, 8 out of 10 of you want to write a book. The reason why you aren't already published, more importantly, why you aren't a bestseller, is because of all of the complications that we are putting in the way on that long road to simple. We have come up with so many sexy excuses for why we need to wait until next month, next year, why we haven't learned enough, we haven't grown enough, we don't have the credentials, all of those kind of things. And I'm here to tell you, and this is not a new message, but you need to hear it today. There is somebody out there that needs to hear this right now. There is someone that, as you don't put out your message, is currently on Google searching for an answer for the thing that is so simple to you, that you do with grace, you do it with ease, you talk about it all the time. It's so much ingrained as a part of who you are that when you say it, your kids roll your eyes about it. Your spouse has heard you say it a million times. Your best friend says, yeah, there she goes again on her rant about. That's what you need to be sharing with the world, because I guarantee you there's somebody right now sitting in front of a keyboard, some of them in despair and desperation, typing in a search for the very thing that you do every day of your life. And it doesn't matter. We want to qualify those kind of things. We want to say, well, you know, the thing that I do with excellence is not, you know, at the level of Mahatma Gandhi. You know, I'm not a world changer like Oprah or like Nelson Mandela or people like that. You are a world changer because you can only be you, and you are the only person who can be you. And the world needs you. I said all of that to lead us into what I always close out every episode with, and that's this message. And I want you to take this into the fiber of your being today. You are uniquely brilliant. You are special. You are specifically who you're supposed to be. You were created for a purpose, and the world needs you. I want you to know that Kathy and I are here every day to help you become a bestseller so that you can share your unique brilliance with the world and you can live every day of your life as a thriving entrepreneur. Until next time, have a great week.
Thanks for listening to Thriving Entrepreneur today. If you want to get your question answered, send an email to questions@wehelpyouthrive.com. We look forward to you joining us again next time.
You've heard Kathy and I talk about it. You've seen the workshops. You have watched as others of your friends have become a best-selling author. And now it's your turn. Let me ask you this. What would being a best-selling author do for your business? Over 80% of people surveyed said that they want to write a book, which means that if you're listening, you probably are one of those people. Now is your time, because you have a message that needs to be shared. That message is not for you. It's not for your ego. It is because it serves other people. Kathy and I are here to help you share your unique brilliance with the world. All you need to do is go to wehelpyouthrive.com, check us out, and find out how you can be a best-selling author today.